Hi, my name is Darlene, and I'm a recovering addict. Hi, everybody. I would like to thank God for being here this morning, and I would like to thank the program committee for having selected me to speak on this topic. You know, I was talking to my partner this morning, and he asked, you know, are you going to give us a message of spirituality? You know, are you going to tell us what to do? Something to that effect, you know. And I said, well, you know, I've never spoken on spirituality. What I talk about is what I do. You know, it's like the life that I live. And if that comes across as something spiritual, somebody will praise God for that. I'm serious. You know, because, you know, for me, spirituality, it equals serenity, you know. And it's like whatever it is that I have to go through in order to cultivate that state of mind in myself, then those are the things that become spiritual for me. And those things can vary from anything from taking a walk around the lake until going to a person that may or may not intimidate me and telling them exactly what's on my mind and how I feel about it. So spirituality covers a lot of different things. It covers just my day-to-day existence, you know, whatever that entails. When I got to this program, I had religion and spirituality totally confused. I had come from a religious background, and from that background was a lot of legalism, and I was bound by the legalism, like you had to do this and you had to do that, and if you couldn't do this right, then don't even talk to God. It's like, get yourself together, then if you want to know God, come on up to the throne, you know. And so consequently, by me shooting dope all night and going to sing in the choir on Sunday mornings, you know, I never measured up. And you know, it was a real struggle for me. It was a real struggle. So when I got to this program and I heard the first three steps, you know, I had a serious issue. I know. You can only come one way. And it was just so much stuff, you know. And this might sound like, damn, but, you know, when you've been condition year after year after year. I was in church, I was in Bible study, I was in the choir. And when you've been conditioned like this year after year after year, it's a real struggle to begin to let that stuff go, you know, and to begin to hold on to what's spiritual, you know. And I have to be careful, even in Narcotics Anonymous, about being pulled in by the legalism of it all, because for me, my spirituality means being free of that. And for me, I cannot be free when I'm bound by the legalism, you know. And so I have to work on being true to myself. So in my recovery, you know, when they said a God as I understood him, the God that I had, he was not understanding if you came up short. You know, and you had to be good enough from Jump Street, you know, and it was so many rules. And so what happened for me was I had to get into the steps, and I had to start working the third step, and that says we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. And I had to actually sit down and write out some characteristics that this God had, you know. And I still have to do that for myself because, as I say, when you've been conditioned year after year after year to be a certain way, and then that stuff that comes up periodically, it's like being purged, you know, and being purged is like filling this glass up with water and continuing to pour even after the glass is full. It's like the old stuff has to come to the top in order for the new water to get in, and it overflows. And that's what has to happen for me. You know, I have to be purged on a daily basis. That stuff has to come up in order for me to deal with it. You know, in order for me I get miserable a lot of times when I take a hold to this old God that I've had for many, many years. And so at that point, I become willing to do something different. And spirituality looks like willingness to do something different for me, too, because a lot of times, The way that I've done something over the years is my way of doing it. And if it's one thing this program has taught me is that if my way had worked, I would never have qualified for one of these seats, you know. And my way qualified me to be here. I didn't know who I was as a person when I got here. I was fragmented. I'm talking serious emotional damage as a result of incest, as a result of emotional deprivation and neglect, as a result of how, not necessarily the things that had happened to me in my life, but how I responded to the events that happened in my life. Because there have been many people who have experienced what I've experienced and more, and did not necessarily have to become an addict and grew up to be well-rounded human beings. So I don't blame what happened to me, you know, but when I got here, because of how I responded to the events that had occurred in my life, I was real fragmented. I didn't have a clue as to who I really was, a true self, but I didn't know it at the time. Now, if you had told me this, because I was reasonably intelligent, very articulate, if you had suggested to me that I didn't have a clue as to who I really was, I would have, I probably would have talked you down. You know, you would have felt kind of sorry you even said it, you know, and because I have that ability to articulate, you know, and as I began to get to know who I was, you know, and to challenge myself in my journal writings, you know, it's like, you know what, darling? Articulation doesn't give you substance. That doesn't make a person. That doesn't make you real. That doesn't give you content. You know, who are you and what are you all about? And for me, spirituality took that role because, I did not know who I was. It became a road of self-discovery. It became a road where I began to be present in my body and ask myself questions. Questions have been very, very important to me in getting to know who I am. And it's about asking the right questions to myself. Who are you? You can't answer it today. It's okay. But one thing that I've learned is to stay with the question, because the answers will come. So I try to stay with the question, and as I presented these questions to myself, who are you? What are you about? How come when you go to this meeting, you act this way? What's that about? How come when you go to this meeting, you don't even know you've been there until you get home and settle down 3 hours later? What's that about? You know, and I began to look at this stuff. I began to look at how I respond to the world around me. You know, what was going on? Why, when this particular woman walked by, I felt totally intimidated. You know, and I had to look at that stuff and find out. And so when the answers did come, it was when I was ready to accept the truth. And I'm sure you've all heard that it's the truth that sets you free. When I was able to accept certain truths about myself, I was able to take responsibility for where I was at and to begin to do whatever it was that I needed to do on a personal level in order to fill that void. Because everything that is revealed to me, has been revealed to me, or will be revealed to me, it's all about the void that I carry within. It's all about the emptiness that I try to fill from either feeling better than or less than or using this substance or that substance or whatever it takes to fill a void that only a relationship with myself and my higher power can begin to tap into. And so it's about taking responsibility for my personal life on a daily basis. And so I start to work with myself, and I started asking myself questions. And when I first got around here, I heard people talking about this child within. You know, I was not open. I'll just tell you, I was like, let's be an adult, let's recover, grow up, you know, just grow up and work the steps, you know, shit, you know. And so I'd go home and I'd write in my journal, you know, and already when I first got here, I remember like, these people say they're addicts. Damn, why do you want to brainwash their subconscious mind into believing that? You know, I'm not saying that, right? I just could not see why anybody would raise their hand and condition their mind to believe that they were an addict. And I certainly couldn't believe, understand why adults were walking around talking about this child within. And I have my journals at home right now, and it's like, you know what? I don't even believe this. But I'm going, and I have several pages. And what I'm talking about here is, you need to understand, it's a process. I didn't just go home and do this one day. We're talking over a period of time where they talk about the three things that are indispensable around here: honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. I'm talking about, on some level, I was open. Just because I even went home and picked up a pen and said I didn't believe it, that was the open-mindedness that I needed at that point, you know. And that's why I think it's very, very hard, you know, for other people to judge another's process, you know, because we don't have the big picture. You know, if had anybody looked at, oh, she's not going to make it, she's not open-minded enough, you know, you don't know. You know, we are not God, you know. And so I began to write in that journal and deal with this child within. And then one day, this little girl inside of me did reveal herself to me. And she was angry. She didn't want me to talk to her. It's like, I don't have nothing to say to you. You're always getting us hurt. You know, you make me sick. You never wanted to talk to me. And it took me a while. I just didn't judge what I was writing. I just let the pen write. Let it say what it wants to say, darling. Don't sit up here and go through the senses, okay? Sensory. And so as this pen began to write, you know, over a period of time, the child within me was angry for a long time. She was not open. And then one day, you know, I was able to establish some contact with her. And we started to talk. And what I'm talking about here, I'm talking about becoming whole. You know, I'm talking about feeling the void. I'm talking about the fact that I am a multidimensional human being, that there are all different aspects of me. There's the light, funny, crazy teenager. There's the wounded child. There's the playful child. And as I grab a hold to all my disowned parts, what happens is it fills me up, and I come to new levels within myself, and that I can grow in other areas. And so I began to deal with this child within, and her name, I gave her a name, and she was like real spunky. You know, she liked to play once I got to know her, and she'd be running around inside of me like, oh, come look at this, you know. And I call her Chili Boo. And so Chili Boo, yeah. So Chili Boo is cool though. And she showed me a lot of stuff about myself, because what I discovered, that this child within me can get into spaces inside of me that I cannot access in and of my adult self. And what happens is I get information about who I am. And it's always, you know, when I said it's about self-discovery, my process has been so exciting at times. It has felt as though Chili Boo was running around inside of me, pulling covers off of stuff, saying, look, and look at this, you didn't know, and come here, you know. And it's like the things that I discover are like great. And so one day, this has been after a couple of years of dealing with her and just talking with her, I remember, I'll never forget this, I was driving, and it was like a little vision. She said, come here, I want to show you something. And she like took me down this corner, and she took me like behind my heart. And behind my heart, it was a real dark corner. And it was another little girl in that corner who had been beaten, who had extension cord welts all over, who had no clothes on, and who was in a huddle crying. And I asked her, who is that? She said, that's you. That's you too. And that's the part of me that it had been so hard for me to accept. That needy, vulnerable, hurt, and wounded person. That's the part of me that when I saw it in another person, and if you weren't ready to get into the solution, and I couldn't deal with it. Because what I've learned today is that was self-rejection. And I was rejecting myself to that degree. And so I saw this child, and she wouldn't let me touch her first either. But over a period of time, I began to establish
some contact with her. And what I had to do for her was, along with taking responsibility, it was very important that I lift her up in prayer. Because what she needed was something divine. You know, she had been wounded beyond what I was able to do in and of myself, taking responsibility for her well-being or not. She needed a loving, healing touch. And see, that's when I have to believe that a power greater than myself just could, you know. Not that he would, but that he could. That he is able. Because when I looked at the state that I was in, it was real apparent to me that the depths of that despair, I could not begin to feel, you know. And I had to believe that God is able, you know. What else? You know, it's like I was between a rock and a hard place. I had nothing to lose from believing that. But to not believe it would mean to remain in that constant state of being hurt, wounded, like walking around with an emotionally infected person, unable to cultivate loving relationships in my life, unable to cultivate the stuff that was really real. Because when I got here, the damage that had been done to me was so intense that I wasn't able, you know. It's one thing to come here and to smile and to show you guys love, but I was like a totally different person at home, you know. And so, and in the beginning, that had to be good enough. You know, I was a newcomer. Every day that I wasn't taking a drug, that was big time shit, and it still is. But I had to become willing over a period of time to address the things within me that prevented me from receiving the very love in my life that I said that I wanted so badly. And so I had to look at myself, and I had an 11-year-old daughter, and it's like I couldn't stand this girl. You know, I don't know whether she reminded me of myself. I don't know what it was, but as she was acting out every day in school, she'd be acting out. And she came home, and I remember I had to sit her down and talk to her one day, you know, and I told her, you know what? Mommy has a problem. And all I know is I am determined to be a better person, but I am so angry, honey. I can't be the mother that I need to be to you. And I need to have you in a safe place. I don't want you at my mother's house because everybody's using there. All I know is I want to get better for us. And so what I had to do was put my daughter in a foster home, and I had to get into therapy. And I went through some heavy stuff when I did that, because I was treated as though I was just this person who had been beating her child to death. You know, I had been clean and sober for a couple of years, and they were writing up that I was a drug addict and all this stuff, and I was using, and all this stuff was in the court report, and it sent me into a shell, you know. And I started to feel like I had no friends here in Narcotics Anonymous. I was so hurt and so wounded, I stopped reaching out. And that's when I found out that there's a bottom line around here, you know, and that boils down to my relationship with God, you know, because I was just that wounded. And I was hurt, and I spent a whole lot of nights at home crying on my knees, humbly asking for God to remove whatever it was in me that prevented me from giving the love that I needed to give in order to feel good about who I am and who I was put here to be. And so it came down to some real practical stuff, you know, like when my daughter did come home, there was a honeymoon period, of course, but then there was that period where reality sets in and you got to do some work. You know, and I remember when I would get angry, this is what spirituality looked like for me at this point in my life. It would mean to be in my body and to pay attention to the fact that my face was beginning to turn to stone. You know, it meant being willing to let the muscles in my face go. Let them back down. Unclench your teeth, honey. You know, put your hand open, okay? Don't bite your bottom lip, you know, because I would always go like this when I'm real mad, you know, the shit starts to boiling me, and I had to be willing not to do this. You know? And that was hard to do in the heat of my anger. That was hard to do, something as simple as letting the muscles go. But it's like they say, you know, follow it through to the end before you go back and use. I have been so hurt through my inability to cultivate love in my life that I was just willing to do something different. You know, there was a point where my relationship with my daughter, it was all about we were in the house and all I did, the most communication we had was me giving orders. That is not, you know, that is not what I want for my life. That is a relationship, but it's the lack of one, in my opinion. And so, you know, like over the years, I just have worked with her, you know, and I've worked with myself a lot. And today, you know, I am not a perfect mother, but today I'm able to sit down and to play Uno with my girl. You know, today I'm able that if I come in the door and she wants to show me something, I can sit down and give her my undivided attention. Today, when I am wrong, I can go back and humble myself before my child so she knows what relationships look like if you are wrong. This is the process. One thing that I teach her is that when we harm or injure one another, it is not all right to act as if nothing happened. You know, it is not all right to just start talking again. It's something very important that we need to do. That means you and that means me. We need to know what it is to be humble, you know. And I teach her that principle, you know, and she's like going on 12 years old, so it's like, you know, sometimes I look at her, you know, it's like this kid is smart. I didn't even, you know, it's like I'm starting to get this new awareness about what, you know, the qualities that she has and what she offers to my life. That, gosh, she uses these phrases that blow me away, and people hear her talk, you know, and they go, oh my God, that is Darlene's kid, you know. You know, she is full of programs. I'm serious. You know, she'll tell me, Mama, maybe you need to work the steps around it, you know. And she's serious. She'll tell me which step is applicable, you know, and I listen at her, you know, and we'll sit at the table, and we'll be talking about feelings and whatever, and, you know, I'll talk about, well, you know, I'm still a little angry, and she'll say, well, what's that about? You know, and I go, God, this girl is too much, you know, just with this stuff that she brings, you know, and I have to talk about that because for a lot of years, I was so cut off from anything maternal. I would go to a meeting and I would say, I don't know what's wrong with me. I don't feel the stuff that other mothers feel towards their kids. I don't feel it. I do not feel it. And that used to hurt me. You know, and today I'm sure I don't feel it like a lot of mothers feel it, but I have more than I had, you know, and for this I'm grateful. You know, God has been good to me in my life, you know, and one of the things that I work on is cultivating that relationship with my higher power. My higher power is God. I'm not going to make any apologies for that. That's who I know to be my higher power, and you know, I remember I would like do this prayer stuff and this meditation stuff like it was something to be done out of duty. And it's like, you know, I talked about how a relationship is cultivated and developed. And by the time I started looking at this particular issue, my relationship with my higher power, I had established some solid friendships in this program. And so I began to look at those friendships and see, what is this that's working? Because this relationship over here don't feel like nothing. You know, God, are you there? It was so vague. It was very unfulfilling. And I was like, it's got to be more to it than this. What's everybody ranting and raving about? You know, and so I started telling them, you know what? You're vague to me. You know, and one of the reasons I did that, because what I found out that was working in the friendships that I had in my life was the fact that I was willing to be available to these people. I was willing to be honest. I was willing to talk about me and who I was and what was really going on with me. So I saw that I already had the skills, so I just transferred them to that relationship with my higher power. And so what that meant was, like, for me, when I would pray, I had to, like, consciously work on cultivating the relationship, okay? Being an active participant in it. And so when I would pray, I would first of all just try to get in an attitude that, you know what, you're talking to the power that's governing this whole universe right now. and you got action at whatever. You know, don't you think you might want to take something of substance here? You know, and so I started to work on being in a certain attitude, and it helped me to put like softly playing music. For me, gospel music works, you know, to keep my mind focused, because I'd be all off at, you know, and Macy's trying on the dress I saw yesterday, and you know, girl. And so I had to like do something to keep my mind, you know, being about what I was doing. And so I started just talking about what was really going on. I let all the stuff that was going to worry me all day long come up to through here and through here. You know, all the stuff that as soon as I got up, I was going to start worrying and tripping on. I let that stuff come up in that relationship. And I started talking about the fears around it. You know, I started talking about all that kind of stuff. And I was just willing. And I started walking around the lake. I live near a lake. And I would walk around the lake near my house. And sometimes it would be like just looking at the trees. The fact that there are more than one kind of leaf on all these trees. Something simple. The flowers. The colors. The way the water flows, the non-resistance, you know, it's like all kind of principles in nature to be discovered that lead us to a higher power, that lead us to a God that can work in our lives. And that's how I began to look at that relationship and to cultivate it and to grow with it, you know. And sometimes I'm not as consistent. And for me, see, some people need to get up every day and do whatever they do as a ritual every morning. But for me, I talked about earlier how my recovery is also the recovery from legalism and rules. And see, it's okay for me to talk to God in the shower some mornings. You know, I have to be all right with that, because otherwise I get hung up with, oh my God, you was too busy, and you just had to get dressed first, and you didn't have time to get, oh my God, you know, don't expect no good day from God today. You know, you got it coming, you know, and you probably gonna have a wreck, you know. And so I have to know, you know, that God loves me, bottom line, you know. And for me, that's more important, accepting the love, than it is to do something according to A, B, or C, you know. And most of the problems, a lot of the problems that I have in my life today are only because I'm unable to let that love and that grace that is so freely given to me, that I'm just simply unable to let it in. And as I grow in maturity, you know, as I become willing to open up and to allow what's rightfully mine in, then I have access at experiencing it. It's one thing to have something, and it's a totally different thing to have it and to experience it, you know. And so that's what I work on, is allowing the love of God in my life on a daily basis. And God works through you people, too. You know, I'm not sitting up just talking about somebody on a throne, you know. I have a Heavenly Father, but I also have you guys, you know. And for me, that's real important, because, you know, I heard Beth say last night that the strongest sentence in that book, and that's for me too, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another is without parallel. That is real in my life today. Because, see, I still hurt a lot of times today. I still have a lot of growing to do today. I still have a lot of areas within myself that I have to come up against. And when I talk about come up against it, I'm talking about I have to go in here and I have to get real with me about what's going on with me and take responsibility for it. You know, the six steps is we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And that is real, you know, because when you're ready to have God change something about you, whether it's to add a particular quality or to take away something that no longer works for you, what happens is you become willing. You become willing to do what you need to do in order to add that quality, or you become willing not to do what it is that keeps you going on along the same lines. And see, that is the step that separates the men from the boys and the girls from the women. You know, because you're going to do some serious growing up. I'm going to do some serious growing up. And that's hard. You know, One of the things that's going on in my life today is I get to have a baby clean and sober today. I found out I'm a couple of months pregnant, right? And I was shocked at first. I was shocked at first, you know, and I was like, God, didn't you see I went to get them pills? I was all responsible and shit, right? You know, it's like, I got the pills. Now you do your part. You know, it's like, no, you cooperated enough to let this happen. No, and so I was like in shock at first, but then I thought about, you know, and just the way things occurred is that, you know, if it's one thing I know, I pray for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. And it's like my life is being carried on a current. You know, I am in God's will for me. You know, I believe that everything that is happening in my life is because it's God's will for me. I'm working at a job where I got I was a consultant. And you know how I got this job? I never filled in a resume. I never did any of that stuff. Somebody went back and told somebody else about me, and somebody told somebody else about me. And they told me to get a resume together, but I'm walking around in so much fear because they're not going to hire me anyway. So I never write the resume, right? And they hire me anyway. You know, and things are happening for me. And she offered me another position that's on a permanent full-time basis. And it's not with the pay that I want. And so the first day she called me in there, I said, oh, okay. I just kind of like, you know, okay, I should be glad she even talking to me. You know, and so I talked to my mate, and he was like, you know what? You can say what you need to say. You don't have to have expectations of the results, but you can say what you need to say. So I went in there the next day, you know, and I told her I believe that I'm worth more than these amount of dollars, and she asked me why, and I proceeded to tell her why, you know, because what I had was, you know, beyond anything a book that could give a person, even though I go to school, well, I'm registered, you know, not that spiritual, you know. But you know, I went back and told her, and in the beginning of the meeting, I said, one of the things that helps me to feel good, that helps the void, the hole, which is the lack of spirituality is all about to me, that void. I went back in there and I stood up for myself, you know, and I think it's real important that when we communicate, we sound like what we're saying. You know how, like, you with your old man and you been halfway mad or something and he try to get at you, you be like, no, you don't even sound like you mean it, you know. You can, and it's like, if you mean it, he gets the message. Like, stop, shit, I ain't got time, you know, or whatever, you know. So I sounded like what I was saying. You know, I sounded like it. I sounded clear. I sounded almost authoritative, you know. I said almost, you know. But that felt good. When I left, I didn't get any more money, but what she told me was that she rewards people for what they do around there, and that, you know, she knows what I'm worth, you know, and it's only because this is all she can give me at this time. And I asked for a certain office space. At first she was like, that's too bad, you know, and by the time I finished talking, she was like, and you know, about that office space, let me think about that, you know, and it's like, okay, you know, and that felt good. That was what those little things on a day-to-day basis, they're willing to let my face go. Being willing to talk if I don't necessarily want to talk. Being willing to go and tell another person what I need to say on my own behalf. And being willing to allow the love and the grace of God in my life as much as I am able on a daily basis helps to fill that void within me. And for me, spirituality is all about claiming who I am, learning who I am, and allowing that void to be filled within me. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Darlene. Now we'll hear from Kenny.
I'm a drug addict, and my name is Kenny.
Hi,
I don't know if I got anything to say now. Yeah, girl, you said it all. You know, I want to welcome those who identify themselves as a newcomer. I definitely want to say that this is the entranceway into heaven. Anyone who has been living in hell for any amount of time, it's one promise that I can make to you, that if you follow the road of Narcotics Anonymous, one day you will see the pearly gates. And I do promise you that. I want to thank the committee of Narcotics Anonymous for allowing me this opportunity to stand before you and to share what spirituality means to me in my life, what it has done for me, and also just to share the joy and celebration that I have received from Narcotics Anonymous. There are some individuals in this room who I don't have the opportunity to see a lot any longer, because Narcotics Anonymous has made me a productive member of society again, which means I work. But every time I see them, I'm always reminded of how deeply I can feel for another human being, and for that I am very grateful. Let me backtrack. When I was clean 3 years, I was driving my car, and I was feeling this deep sense of distress and turmoil inside of me. I could not understand what was going on. I'm saying, damn, I'm clean 3 years, I got a job, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm doing this. Why do I want to die? I was driving my car, and I screamed out in my car. I said, damn it, if I got to live like this, I'd rather die. And I was going to head towards the cliff. Well, it's pretty obvious, I didn't go over the cliff. I got home, and I called someone in this fellowship who's very dear to me, who's been around for a long time. And he sent me back to the dictionary. When I came through the doors of Narcotics Anonymous for the third time, they introduced me to dictionary therapy. For a long time, I was an echo in this fellowship. You see, the only thing that I did when I came into this fellowship was I took the gun out of the holster and I sat it down. It was still loaded and it was still smoking. Narcotics Anonymous teaches me how to unload that gun one bullet at a time. Well, I picked up the phone and I said, yo, so-and-so, I want to die. I want to die. He said, well, go to the dictionary. I said, for what? He said, look up the word, admit it. I said, I've done the first step. He said, go back and look it up. And I went back to the dictionary, and the word admitted had two definitions. For the first 3 years of my sobriety, I did the first definition. I came to these rooms and I verbally admitted. I just verbally said, I'm a drug addict. I verbally told you how dishonest and what a manipulator I was, and I'm this and I'm that, because that's what everybody else said. So I knew I was saying the right words. But after 3 years, I still felt like a hollow tube inside. There was no substance, there was no meaning, there was no integrity, and there was no self-respect. And when I got to the second definition, I went back to when I finally hit bottom in my life. You see, bottom for me wasn't because I lost a home. I lived in the gutters of the South Bronx in Harlem, and I slept on the rooftops of the South Bronx in Harlem. So my bottom wasn't because I lost the house. My bottom wasn't because I became, wasn't because of financial insecurity. Every nickel, dime, quarter I ever put in my hand went towards altering my state of consciousness or my state of feeling. I am not a drug addict who came into Narcotics Anonymous with a bank account. My bottom wasn't because I lost a relationship. My relationship was a 26 pipe, a cooker, and a bag of dope. I went to bed with it. I had an orgasm with it. I made sex with it. I woke up with it. That was my relationship. You know, I tell people in this fellowship, if I had sex when I was using drugs, it was coincidental. I am not a drug addict who would stand up and tell you how I performed for 8 hours when I was using. So those things was at my bottom. I was laying down in San Jose, and I was laying on that bed, and for the first time in my life, my mind got quiet. I didn't have a thought. And I got in touch with all these wounds inside. I got in touch with all the pain, devastation, all the fear, all the wreckage that my addiction had created in my life and other people's lives. And it was out that time I knew no more drugs, no more people, no more places, no more things could relieve me of what I was feeling inside any longer. I knew that was it. And it blew me away. It blew me away. It was at that time I had finally reached a place in my life where I was totally helpless and defenseless. So when I went back to the dictionary and the second definition of the word admitted is to let something in. I said, wow. To finally be at a place in your life where you can let some force, some power finally enter into that place in your own soul that can start the healing process. When I laid on that bed, I had finally reached a place in my life where that door just opened up and a power entered and touched me deep down inside and said, this is it, and it's going to be okay. And it's going to be okay. The definition of spirituality in the dictionary says to refine your thinking and feeling. When I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, they promised me if I did certain things, one day I will wake up and I will think a different way and I will feel a different way. So I will no longer think like a drug addict and I will no longer feel like a drug addict. And he made me that promise. But there were some things that I had to do in order for that promise to come true. And I was introduced to the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. You see, in Hebrew religion and in Greek religion, the term spirituality means the breath of life. And boy, I could identify with that. Because when I walked into these doors, I felt like I was being choked to death. I could not breathe. I could not breathe. Narcotics Anonymous, I walked in and they brought an oxygen mask over to me. And they said, we will resuscitate you back to life. And they gave me an oxygen mask. It's called spirituality. To me, spirituality are just principles that I choose to live by in my life on a daily basis. The first principle of the first step is spiritual honesty. It's just learning how to tell the truth. You see, I believe I cannot sit in the seat of spirituality very comfortably until I learn how to sit in the seat of my own humanity very comfortably. Which means looking at the good, the bad, and the ugly. Narcotics Anonymous tells me I don't have to dissect myself anymore. You see, because when I walk through this door, and when any other addict walks through this door, what this fellowship does that no other fellowship could do is celebrate that individual. Narcotics Anonymous, spirituality is about celebration. Addiction is about dying. So the first thing, boy, when she was talking about one drug addict, the therapeutic value of one addict but another addict, I just thought about the celebration. Because the reason, and I'm always in touch with why I like to walk into one of these rooms, is because someone embraces me. Someone embraces me. I don't have to explain myself, and I know I'm welcome. Look at me. You know, it's like, man, what's with you? I said, man, because when you walk through this door, the message that you're telling me is, you don't want to pick cotton anymore. The message you're giving me, the message any drug addict gives all of us when they walk through that door, especially that newcomer, and I understand why one of the spiritual principles of this fellowship says you reach your arm out to the one who is behind you. You reach your arm out to those that follow you. One of the principles of this fellowship is that I am no longer selfish or self-centered. I learned how to give it away. And so when the newcomer comes in and they announce themselves and we stand up and we applaud and we scream and we holler, and after the meeting you say, damn, I'm glad you're here. Here's my phone number. It's celebration. I remember that time in my life when it wasn't okay to celebrate. I remember the time in my life where the only thing that I could do was sit in a darkened basement and just hold on to my invisibility. I put a challenge out to you. Anyone in this fellowship who says that they truly want to recover, anyone in this fellowship who truly announces that they live by spiritual principles in your life, I challenge you. Because the greatest challenge for people like us, when we finally get to that place in our lives where we make that admission means that we are willing to give up every fear we have ever held on to in our lives. I really want you to think about that. When I say I am ready to follow the spiritual path, I am making an admission that I am ready to lay down every fear I have ever held on to in my life. That's why I understand. The most powerful principle that I can live by in my life today, spiritual principle, is the principle of love. Love is not mentioned once in the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, but the 12 steps leads you to a place of love. They don't mention the word once. The 12 steps says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, awakening means to be aroused from a state of inactivity. We have been dead on a certain level in our lives for a long, long, long time. And for me, that awakening means finally getting to a place in my life where I can reach out and give love and receive love. And for me, that is the scariest principle of all in this fellowship, is the ability to love and be loved. So I understand along my path to discover the spirituality in my life that it should take a tremendous amount of courage. It takes a tremendous amount of courage for a drug addict to recover. Any idiot cannot use drugs. I believe that. Any idiot cannot use drugs. I did it. I did it. And went back out and used it again. But I stopped. So it became real clear to me after my second relapse that any idiot cannot use. But boy, I was going through this turmoil in this fellowship when I came back at the 3-year point. And someone said, Kenny, they grabbed me by the collar, and they said, it's going to take a tremendous amount of courage for a drug addict for you to recover. They said, a coward don't recover. And I did not know where to look. I said, well, where am I going to find this courage? Where? Show it to me. What does it look like? To find it for me. And he gave me 12 steps. So find those principles for yourself. These are the principles that are going to lead you to that place in your life, to that kingdom in your life, that you're going to be willing to fight for on a daily basis. Because if I am not willing to fight for my kingdom, I'm not going to stay clean. I'm not going to stay clean. If I am not willing to align myself with that power in my life that allows me to face those skeletons in my closet on a daily basis, I am not going to stay clean. Because there come some days in my life that I wake up and the only thing that I can see is darkness. I cannot see love. I cannot see humanity. I cannot see compassion. I cannot see care. And the only thing that guides me through them is those principles in my life. The only thing that guides me through them is the power that I have found in my life through those principles that allows me to walk through that darkness. You see, because every morning I wake up, I'm not there. I'm not there. So if I don't have that power that can do the ultimate healing, because there is no human power that can relieve me of my suffering. None. So my only purpose is to align myself with those principles and that power in my life on a daily basis and just face what lies ahead. You see, because I believe in the saying where they say, you know what? You cannot enter into the kingdom of heaven until you see it. Narcotics Anonymous gives me the vision where I can see, where I can see where I want to go. I walked in here blind. I had no vision. I did not know where I want to go. And by sitting down and embracing these principles in my life, for once in my life, I can see where I want to go. I can see where I want to go. One of the bullets in my chamber after 3 years was the spiritual principle of forgiveness. I believe that we throw these phrases around like frisbees in this fellowship. You know, let go and let God. So the newcomer says, well, what does that mean? Keep coming back. I was going through a lot of emotional turmoil and upheaval. You see, because there's one thing about this fellowship. If you keep coming back, whether you're working it or not, something happens because you finally realize that you're in the presence of the ultimate love. I mean that. One day, I sat in these rooms and I realized that I was in the presence of the ultimate love. And what happens when we're in the presence of love? Love brings to surface all the barriers that stand between love. So, the abuse, the violence, the anger, the rage, the pain, every time I'm in the presence of love, it just brings it right to the surface. And I can't stop it. I'm powerless over it. I'm powerless over it. So I only have two alternatives. Either I find a way in which to embrace it, or I run. Or I run, like I've done all my life. This fellowship told me when I came in, they said, Kenny, for the first time in your life, you can stand firmly planted and not run. And not run. And I said, boy, what a concept. What a concept. But I was sitting in these rooms right after that 3-year period, And I was going through all this emotional upheaval and emotional turmoil, you know, and I was really in touch with, when she was talking about the little boy, the child inside, and it became real clear to me that the little boy had to grow up and be a man, and the little boy did not know how to do that. And the little boy just wanted to remain a little boy forever. You see, because I know today I'm only a child, you know, in the kingdom of God. But on this planet, the little boy must grow up and become a responsible man, and I did not know how to do that. And I was rocking, I was going crazy, and finally someone said, Jimmy, you know, the bullet that's in your chamber right now is the bullet of forgiveness. And I didn't know how to do that. I did not know how to do that. You know, once again, Kenny, you got to learn how to forgive. Damn. I said, how do I do that? He said, keep coming back. So I kept coming back. And I stand in the meetings and I would cuss people out. You know, and I was just going crazy. I was crazed. Finally, I was in prayer and meditation, and it came to me that forgiveness was an emotional and spiritual exercise of freedom. It was an emotional and spiritual exercise of release. It was an emotional and spiritual exercise of freedom. You see, we walked, at least I walked in this room dancing a whole nother dance and singing a whole nother song. And it wasn't a song and dance of freedom. It was a song and dance of enslavement. When I walked into the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous to introduce me to a new song and new dance, and it was a song and dance of freedom and liberation. And it just blew me away and it rocked me away. Because, you know, the bottom line of this process for me, it's about reclaiming my integrity and my self-respect. Because if I can stand before you today with my head up high and with my back up straight, my backbone straight, and look you straight in the eyes, you know, and just tell you who I am, I know I'm on the right path. You know, because I heard Max Robinson say, you know, he was the first black anchorman, news anchorman here in the Bay Area, and he died from AIDS. You know, he became a drug addict. Well, he was one of us. He died one of us. And he said just before he died, from that devastating disease, he said, you know, the only thing that I can take with me is my integrity. And it really hit me when he said that. You know, that we scramble around on a daily basis for all these things that are presented. You know, I still have this hypnotic connection to the material world and the outside world. But when he said that, he finally brought home the bottom line of this whole process. He said, boy, when I leave here, if any one person in here could say, man, you know what, Kenny was okay. You know, that, What I left behind is a legacy of love, caring, and concern, that I know that I'm on the right path. I know I'm on the right path. And so when that hit me, when I was going through my meditation, that forgiveness isn't a spiritual and emotional exercise of freedom, I just shivered. I just shivered. You know, I mean, my body just shook. And for 30 days, about 30 days, I was in my sponsor's office every day, just going crazy. You know, because once I gave myself permission to go through the process of being free, emotionally, spiritually free, that means I gave myself permission to, man, face the skeletons in my closet behind a lot of stuff. And boy, those skeletons came out and said, boo! And scared the shit out of me. You know, at that time, I was afraid of ghosts. You know, I ain't afraid of no ghosts today, but I sat in my sponsor's office and I went through, you know, pain and I just went through agony. And he sat there and he smiled, you know, and he just, you know, just reassured me, held my hand, you know, and he said, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. You see, I used to sit in these rooms and I hear people talk about love-hate relationships in their lives. And I used to say that too, especially around my father. I love him and I hate him. Well, I tell you something, folks, after working the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous, I realize that love and hate cannot coexist. They cannot occupy the same space. Narcotics Anonymous says you have the freedom to make a choice.
You either love or you hate, but you cannot do both. Because if love and hate coexist in the same space, it's a schizophrenic feeling. And we walk through these doors schizophrenic. Every addict I know is a schizophrenic. He's a multiple personality. Alcoholics Anonymous says you have a choice. You can be one personality. And so I made a choice in my life around my own man. I said, you know what? I'm going to love the guy. And I'm going to suffer all the consequences of loving. And so I gave myself permission to go through all that stuff. And the only thing that I had to hold on to, because remember I said recovery takes a tremendous amount of courage. Recovery is a hero's journey. You know, if you're sitting in these rooms today clean and sober, you are the greatest hero in your life. I want you to know that. If you're here today clean and sober and you haven't used anything, when you look in the mirror today, you know, really acknowledge to yourself what a hero you are. Because you are. And the only thing that kept me from going crazy and jumping off a bridge was the courage that I found and a power greater than myself. The only thing that kept me from going crazy and jumping off a bridge was those principles that I made a commitment to in my life to live by. You see, because if I committed suicide and jumped off a bridge, then I would be breaking one of the most cardinal commitments that I had made, and that was not to run. Not to run, but to face it. And for 30 days, I went crazy. I was a stock-living idiot. I have people around me, my friends, who made decisions for me because I couldn't make decisions. And one day I woke up, and I was no longer in that turmoil, and I was free. And I made a decision to go back and see my father. You see, we talk about spiritual experiences and spiritual awakenings. I believe we have a multitude of spiritual experiences before we finally reach the ultimate awakening. At least that's the way it's worked in my life. My father died 3 times on the operating table from toxic poisoning, from drugs and alcohol. My father's clean and sober today, 9 years. I made a decision to go back and see the man. The last time I had saw that man, I hadn't seen him in 12 years. And the last time I saw him, he was lying on the ground in the South Bronx where I had knocked him down. And I got the time off from work. You know, I got on my knees and I asked God to just please give me a sign if what I was doing was his will. And I had a number of signs. Anyway, my father had since left New York City and moved back down to Greenville, South Carolina, his place of birth. And I flew back. And he met me at the airport. And here was a man who never knew how to say, I love you. And here was a man who never embraced me. And here was a man, the only thing he knew how to do was pick up a hammer and hit me upside the head. We stood in the crowded airport and we just embraced. And we cried. You know, while I was there, I had a chance to go to my mother's grave, a woman who I never knew. You know, her and she died from childbirth. Her and a little baby girl died. And I had a chance to make my amends. And I used to hear people say, well, you know, once you make your amends, how great they felt. I tell you something, as soon as I made my amends and her spirit told me it's okay to move on, it's okay to let this go and move on with your life, it was at that time I gave myself permission to finally walk through the darkest tunnel I've ever walked through. I had to walk through that tunnel before I finally got to the awakening. You know, I looked in the mirror this morning. I'm going to Yosemite as soon as I leave here. I'm going to spend 3 days. But I looked in the mirror this morning and I embraced myself. And I told myself how much I loved myself. And I told myself, Kenny, you are my greatest hero. And today I really mean that. And I offer that to you too. You know, I'd like to share one last thing, and do whatever it is we are after this, whatever that is, I don't know. But I had the opportunity. The fifth tradition of Narcotics Anonymous says our primary purpose is to carry the message to the addict that still suffers. I didn't realize what a powerful, powerful spiritual tradition that is. That thing is laced with spiritual power. I mean spiritual power, folks. I worked with a young lady for 3 weeks at the facility that I work at. I got a call one day, said, Kenny, would you please come over to the main center? We want you to talk to someone. And I went over and I spoke to this girl's mother. She was in recovery up in Bodega Bay and her condition got worse. You know, and no one knew what was wrong, but everybody kept saying, don't take nothing. Whatever you do, don't take nothing, don't take nothing, don't take nothing. I get so pissed off when I sit in these meetings, and I have people who want to be goddamn MDs. You know, and I say, you ain't nothing but a drug addict. You know, but they say, don't take nothing, don't take nothing. And her condition got worse. And her mother brought her down to our facility. And after I spoke with the mother, I went up to the ICU unit. And I walked in the room, and I was devastated. I turned around, and I ran back out the room. You know, here was a 30-year-old young lady. She was beautiful at one time. She had cirrhosis of the liver. She had alcoholic hepatitis. Her kidneys had stopped. And when the kidneys fail, you retain fluid, and so she had a big belly. You know, and I ran out, and I just started crying. I said, God, why me? You know, what am I going to tell her? God said, you ain't going to tell her nothing. And this tradition came into my head. And I walked back into the room and I held her hand. I said, how you doing? My name is Kenny. I'm a drug addict. You know when someone raised their hand and they said, I'm so-and-so, I'm a drug addict, they don't have to say anything else. Because you already know who they are. You already know their story. And she looked in my eyes and it's like they started dreaming because she knew, finally, somebody who understood. I don't have to explain myself. And for 3 weeks, I worked with this young lady. You know, I cried. You know, I cried for her pain. I shared her pain. My sponsor said, you pray for her because somebody prayed for your ass to get here. And so I prayed for her. So I prayed for her. You know, and she had a number of operations. One day I walked in, and the only way she could talk with me was with a chalkboard. And she said, Kenny, am I okay? And I didn't know how to answer that. And then I remember some of my spiritual reading. You know, and there was this wise dude. And he had these 12 partners who used to follow him around. You know, and one day they were sitting down kicking it at a meeting. And they said, yo dude, if we follow the message, will we be saved? And he turned around in his dignity and his integrity and said, the nature of the flesh is to die. But the spirit is everlasting. I turned around and looked at her and I said, baby, you doing fine. And one Sunday I got a phone call from her father. Said, Kenny, please come into the hospital because we want to pull the plug. I didn't want to go, but I know once you start something in God's kingdom, you're going to finish it one way or another. And I went back up there and I went to the hospital and the plug was pulled. I said my goodbyes, and when I was walking away from my young lady, I thanked her because she gave me the greatest gift of all. You know, she gave me the greatest gift of all. You know, and that was the gift of gratitude. If you want to understand spirituality, understand gratitude. Every drug addict is not going to make it to the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. And I also to say that sometimes helping another drug addict means keeping our mouth shut and just being there. If you cannot be with me in my pain, do not. I don't want you with me during my times of joy. You know, the bottom line of my spiritual principles is: be with me when I'm up, but also be with me when I'm down, because I will be there with you when you're up and when you're down. So thanks a lot.